Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We'll have Raven scratch-offs to give away while they last before I get the scented gingerbread and, even better than that, the peppermint, because I like peppermint this time of year. We're going to be at Coco's. I'm wearing the Coco shirt next Wednesday in the afternoon from 2 to 5. Next Thursday, we'll be at Gertrude's at the BMA with Dan Rodericks and the folks at the BMA and talking some art, talking some holidays, talking about just a great, great show that Dan is doing that I don't think he needs any help selling tickets at this point, but it's still a great concept. Baltimore, you have no idea. And then next Friday, we're going to be at Hollywood Casino up in Perryville, just over the bridge. Great, great sports book up there. They've done some rebranding. They have great food. Really enjoy my pen play card when I'm up there. And we're going to be there on Friday afternoon. And Tom Kelso is going to be joining us in Maryland Stadium Authority to expound further upon the information in regard to the stadia, the land, who's getting all the money, who's paying for it, us. And Luke doesn't care because he lives in Pennsylvania, because he's not a part of this process. So Luke is here. Luke Jones, of course. You know, we talk a lot of football, bro, and I'm getting some baseball vibe. It's Thanksgiving week here. Got the Ravens going out to L.A. And when I think of, like, off-season baseball when it was good around here in the 90s and Angelos was trying to compete, the good old days of the Players Association, you know, holding all the cards, I remember, and I don't brag about this much because it's nothing to be proud of, but Curt Schilling, need I say more, but Curt Schilling, when he signed with the Red Sox and Theo Epstein and Theo went to Shonda and Kurt's house over Thanksgiving dinner, and they sort of worked things out for big contracts. And this time of year, I guess the Phillies sort of opened things for your brother-in-law and all the dark side of your family that supports the National League and the Phillies with the Aaron Nola contract, which was like, how much? Like Lamar money, you know? And but it's not going to be like that here. The offseason here is me talking to the former Maryland Stadium Authority head about how the current baseball owner who beat his brother up in court last year is now trying to hoodwink Wes Moore and all of our, you know, all of our citizens into giving him full control, giving him all the land to do what God knows what. He hadn't had an idea. But this is the offseason we're in where they don't even have a lease here. I'm going to continue to talk about that. And I'm going to let you to continue to talk about, like, how they're going to do better than Kyle Gibson and what they're going to do with Ryan Mountcastle and how they're going to live, you know, after, I don't know, name any of the guys that could be coming or going. And this is also a time for dreamers to dream about how they're going to package Colton Cowser and something else to get something else and something else. So, and we don't even know who's the shortstop and who the third baseman is because we got a rookie of the year and we got the next rookie of the year about to come up. So an embarrassment of riches of baseball to discuss, really. I mean, there's a lot to discuss here. I don't think you and I have talked baseball since we sulked back from BWI that morning from Arlington saying, what happened?
Yeah, it's been a minute. But first and foremost, do want to at least give a nod. Gunnar Henderson this past week named rookie of the year. Brandon Hyde named manager of the year. Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson were top 10 in AL MVP voting. Kyle Bradish, fourth in Cy Young Award voting. So right there, you just talked about the embarrassment of riches. Still so many things to like, even with questions about the lease and payroll and what's next for a team that won 101 games but is trying to get over the hump in October. So a lot of excitement.
I love how you put lease and payroll together. Thank you for doing that. That's really, I mean, I'm not kissing your ass. Everybody knows how I feel about you and being educated, but you cannot talk about this baseball franchise and its dysfunction and the money that's been sucked out of it by the family and where the money's going to come from to support whatever needs to be supported here. And it's a good time to talk about that. It really is. And the Ravens with the bye next week and being really good, the Ravens are going to be good or bad, whether they beat the Chargers or not. This is a good time to talk about the future because the future's now.
Yeah, well, and they won 101 games. I mean, there's so much to like about this current club. It really is. And I thought it was interesting at the end of last week, and this was kind of something that was lost in the wash because the Ravens were getting ready to kick off against the Bengals on Thursday night. But we talked about it at the end of the year, Nestor, that the Ravens or the Orioles, excuse me, had this long list of arbitration eligible players. It was 16, got up to 17 because they acquired Sam Hilliard. 17 players eligible for arbitration. They tendered or agreed to deals with all of them on Thursday. So that alone. Now, do I think all 17 of those players are going to be with them on opening day? No, of course not. But that alone is going to represent a pretty sizable increase in payroll. And look, I'm not saying that, I don't say that to pat them on the back because their payroll was so low these last couple of years, we know. But as it pertains to the lease, the long-term viability, financial planning, you know, even if you're just Mike Elias in the front office kind of waiting for, okay, what's, you know, what's Mr. Angelos going to say the payroll is going to be, what's our budget going to be? These are all, it's all planning, right? You have to think about that, especially with all these young players, right? So there's a lot that goes into it, but I was surprised right off the bat that, you know, Jorge Mateo got a contract, Ryan McKenna got a contract. I mean, guys that I thought very much would have been non-tender candidates are at least here for the time being. And again, that doesn't mean that they're going to be on the opening day roster. So much can happen between now and then. I think a lot will happen between now and then because as much as we talk about free agency, I think given the state of the farm system, I mean, you just laid out shortstop and third base and you just said it in passing, but yeah, you have Gunnar Henderson, who's rookie of the year, Jordan Westberg, who was already here, and Jackson Holliday, who, whether he's going to be here opening day or May 24th, chances are we're going to see him in Baltimore in the first half of next season, barring something unforeseen. So,
and baseball fans know that we've seen the end of Adam Frazier, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want Adam Frazier back at this point. I mean, I wasn't fond of that signing last winter, let alone bringing him back for another year. Look, he had a good first half, whatever. It's fine. But the point is, I just named some names, and Joey Ortiz was already blocked at AAA Norfolk this past year. Go look at what his numbers were playing shortstop / second base. Point is, something is going to have to give because they can't keep just hoarding all these prospects, because at some point in time, you either have nowhere for them to go, or in the case of some guys, you know, they'll start to lose some value because some of them aren't going to pan out. I mean, we talked about this with Kyle Stowers about a year ago. He would have had way more trade value for the Orioles a year and a half ago, but it happens. You know, it's not the end of the world. He wasn't like their best prospect or anything like that, but you've got all of these assets in your system, and you have to figure out, one, where are they going to play? And then two, for the guys who we identify as someone we're willing to part with in the right deal, okay, then what are you going to target? So, you know, people will talk about free agency, and look, there's names out there, Ohtani, Blake Snell, like go down the list. You know, guys at the top of that free agent market, I mean, we know the Orioles aren't going to be in on them. Should they be? Sure. Will they be? No. I mean, because you just have to live in reality of how they're going to proceed. But there are a number of intriguing names, you know, guys that are approaching free agency. You know, Corbin Burns has been thrown, his name's been thrown out there. Glasnow has been mentioned, just not for the Orioles specifically, but in passing. You know, there are guys, Dylan Cease, who has an extra year of club control. You know, there are some starting pitchers who are expected to be available with the right trade offer that kind of look at the Orioles and say, okay, you have prospects A, B, and C that we're not really sure where they're going to fit. Can we move those guys along with a couple other pieces to land that, whether an ace or a number two or a number three starting pitcher? You know,
when's the last time the Orioles made a deal like this? Bedard, but Bedard was bloomed. You know, it was the
they traded him. Right. Yeah, yeah, right, yeah, right.
I mean, when's the last time that they've had to trade a Kowser or a Westberg? Trade a real player. I mean, some fans are going to get their feelings hurt, like on the trading deadline when they decide Trey Mancini or BJ Surhoff. We can go through the history of any of that. But I don't want to say something blockbustery, but there should be a WNST text brought to you by Coons Baltimore Ford at some point that they've done something to trade a guy we know and like for a pitcher we might know and like better. And we should expect that as fans.
Yeah, it's like I said, at some point in time, you don't have room for all these guys. So what are you going to do otherwise? I mean, are you just going to have these guys just play at AAA? And I get it. You want organizational depth. I'm not saying you give away prospects, but if you can land a Corbin Burns, if you can land a Dylan Cease, if you can land Shane Bieber. I mean, I mentioned Glass now. I don't, you know, would the Rays trade it within the division? Probably not, you know, but those are the kind of guys that are expected to be available. But what are you going to part with? And what complicates this for me is, you know, I think a name that would come up right away, because typically when a team trades a pitcher of that ilk, what do they usually want in return? They're probably going to want a young pitcher in return. DL Hall, you look at him and say, okay, maybe he's not going to fit in the rotation, but he might be their closer this coming year, or could project to be their closer, because they're not going to have Felix Bautista. So, yeah, you always have to weigh those different elements, but, you know, you have guys like Joey Ortiz, you have guys like Kobe Mayo, you have different players at AAA, or, you know, at AA on the way to AAA, that you just kind of look at it and say, is there really going to be a spot for them in Baltimore at this point in time? And if there isn't, then you want to maximize your value. You don't want to hold on to guys too long and then, you know, they have diminishing value.
Yeah, I wonder where Westberg's value is, having been in the big leagues and looking like, you know, a semi-ordinary major league player, you know, above average, you know.
So
like,
far.
I don't know. But I don't know if he would have been worth more before he got here. Just, you know what I'm saying? Like, I often wonder, but it's all in the eye of the beholder, and it's all based on the need, too. It's all need-based.
Yeah, yeah. And let's be clear. I don't disagree with your sentiment. You know, Jordan Westberg, I liked Westberg. I still like Westberg. But yeah, he didn't tear the cover off the ball when he came up. He was okay. Better than Adam Frazier down the stretch. I'll continue to point that out, which is why I was a little frustrated that he didn't play more instead of that being a platoon the way it worked out. But the point is, you have, take your pick, like Coke or Pepsi, right? With all these different prospects that they have at the same positions, you can kind of say, who do you prefer? And then it's like, okay, that's fine. Then what are you going to do with the other guy? Because you want to get something in return. Having this great farm system is awesome, but it's not just to supply players for your major league club. It's also to eventually make trades that will augment other positions that you have some need, like starting pitching, for example, you know? So it's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. You know, I already mentioned they have 17 players that were arbitration eligible, that they tendered or signed all of them at Thursday's deadline, which was a little surprising, but again, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're all going to be here for the long haul. Because we know how that works with young, controllable players. But, you know, it really is a case for the Orioles at this point that if we're working under the assumption, and it's, you know, it's not an unfair assumption, it's reality until they suggest otherwise, that they're not going to be trying to land a massive big fish in free agency, then okay, if you're going to try to acquire a top half of the rotation starter, how are you going to do it? Is it going to be, you know, Eduardo Rodriguez, who's a little bit lower on that list, where, okay, could you sign him to a 3-year deal, let's say? You know, it's not going to be Aaron Nola money, and he's not Aaron Nola in terms of his quality as a pitcher. So is it that? If it's not that even, then it is the trade market. Then it is, what are you giving up for Corbin Burns? What are you giving up for maybe Dylan Cease? You know, what are you giving up for Shane Bieber? So it's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out, because, you know, you look at where they stand right now, you know, position player wise, it's tough to expect a move to be made there, you know, in terms of adding, right? Even if you could make an argument that they could still add a middle of the order bat that would make their lineup even better. But just based on what they have as far as the depth in their organization, you know, it's hard to predict that, because they have guys that they're trying to create opportunities for. So you look on the pitching side and you say, okay, I like the overall makeup of the rotation, but whether it's an ace, whether it's a number two that, you know, kind of settles in between Bradish and Grayson Rodriguez, you know, however you want to order the guys, someone in the top half of the rotation, that's what they're looking to land here. You know, they need to be doing better than Jordan Lyles and Kyle Gibson the last two off seasons. And I think Mike Elias recognizes that. It's just a matter of, you got to go out and do it. And what are you going to part with if it is a trade? Who are you going to trade? And you want to hope that you don't trade the wrong guy and then keep the guy in your system that maybe doesn't end up being as good. So, I mean, these are the questions that they're trying to figure out right now. And these are good problems. Let's be clear. They have assets to go out and get a pitcher like that. But what are they going to give up? Are they going to ultimately pull the trigger on it? And, you know, whoever it is, are they going to come in and do the job? Because we saw at the trade deadline, you know, Jack Flaherty didn't work out so well. So, I mean, it's
Well,
just
and then the
you never really
Rangers,
know.
wind up with that veteran guy that sustains them that the Orioles could have had, right? In shopping, and you gave a bunch of names last offseason. You thought they should have done more in the offseason. You thought they should have done more at the trading deadline. I don't know where that is. I mean, Scherzer changed teams and wound up not being the guy that was the difference maker in the end, strangely enough.
You never know. I mean, you never really know. And we talked about that, and I didn't say that to give Mike Elias and the Orioles a total pass. I mean, for me, it was still you needed to add another bullpen arm. But the way those games played out, was the bullpen the biggest factor of why they lost? I mean, that their starting pitching got knocked around really badly. So, and they
Well, we
didn't
talk
hit
about
all that
Mark
well coming
Andrews
into the
getting
game.
knocked out with the Ravens this week and what that's going to mean. The Bautista thing, I
Yeah.
mean,
Well,
certainly it
and that's
took a
a bit,
toll on them in the end.
it did, and it wasn't even so much the three losses to the Rangers, because again, those games got out of hand early, so it's not as though Felix Bautista was going to come in and pitch the third inning. But that is another big factor at work here. I mean, there's been so much oxygen for adding starting pitching, and rightfully so. I get that. I don't disagree with that sentiment, but you better fortify your bullpen. And look, if you tell me right now that you think DL Hall could potentially be the closer, hey, he pitched really well at the end of last season against lefties and righties. So I'll hear that, but you better add another high leverage guy to go with him, because
You
what's it
just
going to
took him
look like
out of the seventh
exactly?
innings, which you just did.
Right. And we talked about this when they traded Jorge Lopez in 22. Batista moved into the closer's role and did a phenomenal job, but the problem for that team down the stretch, they still played well, but the seventh and eighth inning became a little bit more of a struggle for them. So, I mean, you just kind of look at where they are with their bullpen. Who are you really going to trust on the back end? And the bullpen held up admirably without Bautista down the stretch, but let's face it, it was dicey. It was quite dicey on many occasions, especially when they had that September road trip that. And no off days for what, 2.5 weeks or whatever it was. So they've got to figure that out. And that's part of the equation here too. Do you trade one of your prospects or a package of some of your prospects? And I'm not saying your top guys, but do you look to move some of your minor leaguers to add another high leverage reliever? Can you count on doing it the way they've done it in the last couple of years, which by the way has worked out really nicely? I mean, look at what Danny Coulomb did for them last year. I mean, they acquired him right before the season started, and he was one of their best relievers. But I don't know if that's all you can count on, that strategy alone, to make this bullpen good enough. Because again, Batista's not walking through the door until spring of 25. So you've got to figure that out. And that's not to say that you're going to find someone that's going to be a clone of Batista. I mean, that's not realistic, but you certainly need to give yourself some better arms in the back end of that bullpen. And, we'll see how it plays out. Again, DL Hall looks like he could be that. But I just made mention, if you're going to try to land someone like Corbin Burnes or Shane Bieber or Dylan Cease, guess what, Nestor? Some of those teams, they might want DL Hall. So that's where then you get into, all right, what are you going to give up? And then what is that going to mean in terms of consequences for your 2024 rosters? So,
It's really complicated. I mean, it's a
it
jigsaw
is.
puzzle. I mean, we talk so much here over 25 years in regard to the football team and the clock of, well, they'll find a Kyle Van Noy, they'll find a this, they'll find a that. Good baseball teams during the course of the year find players from Kansas City that nobody want to come in and become your cleanup hitter. Like things happen, right? I mean, on any of these teams, but baseball side, we have never really been in this position. I've been on the air 32 years. I mean, they weren't dealing Alex Ochoa and Jeffrey Hammonds. They weren't dealing, Lord knows, the Mark Smiths. I mean, I'm just going through the Adam Lowens. I'm going through all these first round draft picks and these guys and names. These were always the guy, whether it was Ken Gerhart, Craig Worthington, pick anybody you want that was a prospect. Be like them dealing Cedric Mullins 2 years ago. They just didn't do it. When you got a guy overperforming the salary in the modern era, that's the honeypot. When you have Jonathan Scope working on the cheap, or even Manny Machado working on the cheap before you get rid of him, but then you try to replenish it. The Machado trade, you and I talked about, had they really done this, had Buck and Duquette not want to squeeze every squat out of Matt Wieters in an effort to try to win, right? Wringing it out and everything he did with the bullpen and the way they managed the bullpen. You know, Buck was on the front end of, I need innings. Let's hide him out at the Hampton Inn over there in Norfolk. We'll get him up here. Yeah, hide him out in Towson. They won't find him out there. That wasn't a bad Buck, but that, you know, Buck's wife said nice things about me, so I'm trying to be better to Buck. Baseball's different, man. This offseason is different than any other offseason because they have a lease problem. I'll continue to say that, and that affects every part of what he's going to say. He's a liar about budgeting and investment and whether I can afford pick the player, Henderson, Rutschman, pick whoever, Aaron Nola, the next pitcher, whatever it is, money, 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 money. I don't have any. Poor little pitiful me. I'm little broke John. All of that's coming. And then the moving of the franchises and the lease and all the nonsense. But what are they going to pull off? You know, and what's the environment financially, to your point? Just assume they don't want to spend any money. They're not going to spend any money. They're going to run the franchise that way. They're not going to make this splash thing and give Rutschman a bunch of money or give Henderson a bunch of money. So if they're not going to give them money, why are they going to give it to some pitcher? Why are they going to give some pitcher $75 million for 3 years? I don't know, but if they want to win, they need to do what other teams are doing, right? And this is an inflection point for the franchise.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways for what they are. And they've always been effed up. Always. And it always, when the money starts and you got to get down and see Dad or you got to get down and see John, good decisions are not made. And that is me sitting here 32 years of watching this. I'm all about Elias. I'd like to know how happy Elias is. If Elias is happy, where's the press conference, the five-year extension for him? Let me know he's here till 28 because I need to know that. And he needs to know that. And they need to know what a budget is. And they need to figure this out. And they need to figure out their television network. And they need to figure out their debts to the Lerner family. They need to figure out their lease. They can't do any of that. I have people who tell me they can't pick wallpaper over 30 years. So when it comes down to Elias being on the bat phone with Fredo and saying, I've got a Dylan Cease. Well, you know, is that 90210? Where's that? I'm not convinced John knows anything about baseball. So I don't know what the investment would be and the money would be. But at some point, John Boy's going to be the one who has all the purse strings. And I've never seen him spend money on anything other than at the Four Seasons at the cocktail bar there. Like, I don't know what John's spending issues are. I know the family looks desperate in that it's getting rid of all this property. John has spoke out of desperation and come see my book, Stan Connolly, You Know Nothing, who, by the way, I've invited for a crab cake and hope he comes out and shows me how much he knows because I know he knows a lot. But all this is going on, and I'll talk about all that while you and Camden Chack can all talk about what the value of Jordan Westberg is in a trade and how they're going to want a pitcher and how Rodriguez is off the market. They can't have him. They can't have Rutschman. But, yeah, you know, you want Mullins. You want to pay him. Take him. I'll throw him in. Yeah, he plays center field for you. You have to pay him because they don't want to pay guys. So, I mean, I don't think the Mountcastles, Mullins, I don't think anybody's really off the table if they got the right pitcher in Elias's mind. But Elias is, he came from St. Louis and Houston where they have owners who were logical and they had normal meetings and they had normal runs of business. They had leases. They had all of that. I know the place is a dysfunction of F-upitude. I know that. I know people that work there. I know the people in the stadium authority trying to get John Angel. So making decisions and big boy grown up decisions, this is not a normal place. And until I see it function and act normally, I'm never going to go to our public, the listeners out there, and say, this is normal. Because what you and I sit here and talk about makes sense. And the fans talk about things that make sense. I don't know really what John's thoughts are about owning the franchise, how little he wants on the books, if mom's really trying to backdoor it, what they're trying to do with this lease to gift it to the next owner so that he can get a couple of hundred million more on the way out. I mean, it is shrouded in mystery, but I assure you of this. It's also shrouded in incompetency, historically, yeah. Historically. Cheapness, pettiness, incompetency. It's and that's Kevin Brown. Don't say it's not current. It's very current. You and me trying to get into the clubhouse in Arlington, that's how current it is. That's how petty they are. So I don't know how happy Elias and Mydell and all that is. I know it looks like Kumbaya and 101 wins, but this is the inflection point of Mike Elias saying, I need a checkbook and I need you to leave the room and let me do my job. Let me do what I need to do. But the checkbook, man, I'm worried about the checkbook, bro.
Well, you said it. I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth. It's an inflection point. And by the way, that's a good thing, right? This is when they started over, when they truly started over back in the fall of 2018, because the thing had been burned to the ground anyway, because the 18 team was so god awful. But this was the goal was to get to this point in time, right? And they are. And you look at it, they had a 31-game improvement going from 21 when they lost 110 games, 31-game improvement in 2022, and then another 18-game improvement this past year. You're not going to improve by that much once again. I mean, you're not going to go from 101.
By the way, can I say something on this with all these awards and stuff? Why isn't Elias going down the hallway and asking for the sun, the moon, the stars, or saying, I'll go run the Yankees? Like, how do we not know that's not going on? Like, to me, that has to be going on behind the closed doors, because it goes on in every NFL organization and everywhere else. This guy's a freaking genius, right? Like, seriously, right? Like, he is the best thing we've ever seen around here. Maybe we don't talk about it enough. Maybe we didn't do a segment 45 minutes and, you know, and fluffing him last week after he won. But whatever they're paying him, it's not enough. And whatever he asked for, John better give it to him. I mean, seriously.
I agree, although it's an inflection point for him too, because the job is different now for him than it was 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when it was all just
he ain't
drafting.
Picking 1-1 anymore.
Right, exactly, and that's not to say they won't continue to draft well, but it is a different animal now, and now it's a case of you're no longer rebuilding. You just won 101 games. You led the American League. You were the number one seed. All of that, and we know how it played out in October, but the point is now. You have a playoff caliber. You have potentially a championship caliber roster.
Well, make
How do
a
you make it
Smith
better,
trade, bro? Right?
And right? That's and to the point that you just made, talking about, you know, payroll and all those questions. For me, where my question lies is, okay, you strike a deal for Dylan Cease, and I'm just throwing his name out there. And look, he didn't have a great second half, and I know. Just for example, humor me on this. You acquire Dylan Cease. You're okay to pay him what you're going to pay him, but then John Angelo says, well, we can't go that high. So then you acquire Dylan Cease, but then if you have to trade Anthony Santander, and you say, okay, well, that's going to clear a spot for Heston Kerstad, but Anthony Santander hit 60 home runs for them the last 2 years. I'm not
Nelson
all that
Nelson Cruz all over again, right?
He's not Nelson Cruz, because Nelson Cruz, I mean, my goodness, that he did it for almost a decade after he left the Orioles, you know, was a compliment to
I'm
him.
I'm just saying,
but
you
the
missed
point
that
is,
bat. Somebody's going to have to hit those home runs.
Oh, no doubt. But that's, and when I look at their roster right now, and look, I'll buy Gunnar Henderson's going to hit another level this coming year or the next couple years. I'll buy that because I think he's so supremely talented. I'll buy all the hype for Jackson Holliday. But if there's one thing you could talk about with this 2023 Orioles lineup, it was they didn't have a ton of home run pop. You know, you look at where they ranked compared to the Rangers and the Astros and some of the other top teams in the AL, they were a little lacking in that department, which I'm not saying that's the end of the world. But then if you're going to turn around and trade Anthony Santander, who has been, you know, one of your most consistent home run bats over the last few years, you know, so, and if you're only doing that for payroll purposes, then that concerns me. That concerns me then in terms of your ability or lack thereof to max this thing out over the next few years. You know, even before we start getting into, you know, some of their best players getting closer and closer to free agency. So, you know, that's just, you know, that's part of it. And again, there are so many different ways that they can go with their roster, and there's so much to really, really like, even acknowledging dysfunction and questions about ownership, the business side, all those different things. There's still so much to like about this team, but the last thing I want to see is you pull off a trade for a starting pitcher that settle, whether he's an ace or a number two, number three, somewhere, someone to match up with Bradish and Grayson Rodriguez that you have a top three that you feel really good about. And that's not even talking about John Means and some of their other guys. But to do that, then you have to go trade Anthony Santander. That's when I look at this thing and say, what is going to the max payroll going to be? How limited is Mike Elias going to be to enhance and augment what they already have, which is really, really good. Let's be clear about that. We're not talking about the Orioles needing major surgery this offseason in terms of roster building. We're talking about a move here, a move there, and you'd
What's
like to
roster
land a bigger
attrition in your
fish in
mind?
terms of starting pitching.
Who's not
What do you
here
mean?
in your mind? I mean, we talk so much about Mountcastle. We talk so much about Santander. I mean, these were guys we were trying to give away at various points and saying, rebuild, trade, this, that. You talk about Frazier being gone. He maybe never should have been.
Yeah.
But they getting there, not the pitching. I'm talking about the position
Yeah.
players. Where are you on where they are with Austin Hayes, as an example?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because you have some. I mean, in the case of Santander, and the reason why I've mentioned him is because you look at what he made this past year, which was $7.4 million, arbitration, and this is his last year before hitting free agency. And, I'll be honest, I wouldn't be looking to extend Santander, but I also don't want to just give him away as a salary dump, But he's projected to make, MLB trade rumors had him at $12.7 million. So, look, we've talked about Santander as a trade. Potential trade for two or three off seasons now. That's nothing new. So we'll see what happens with that. Austin Hayes, as much as you love the Gold Glove caliber defense he played in left field, which is a very challenging left field at Camden Yards with all the territory to cover, we've also seen him struggle in the second half the last couple of years. And you do have Colton Cowser, you do have Heston Kerstad. So, and it might be that you trade Cowser or you might trade Kerstad, but you've got to kind of figure that out, right?
Hayes costs
So,
more, my point. You know that my point is the guys
sure.
that make money that you feel like,
Right.
we could live without.
And to,
To your point, living without Santander, that's why I brought up Nelson Cruz. I will just, the
yeah.
next guy will just do that. No, he won't. Not that
I mean,
role.
he might, but you don't know, right? It's the unknown. And let's be clear, Santander, until the last couple of years, was a guy who had all kinds of injury concerns and it wasn't until the last couple of years that he actually started walking some. I mean, this going into 22, I think he had a career 290 on base percentage. So it's a credit to the coaching staff, the player development, and him for the work that they put in to make him the player he is. But
You think the
yeah,
stock's high?
it's tough. I don't want to give him away because, again, he's been so good. But at the same time, is he a guy that I'm, of all the players we could be talking about with contract extensions, is he the guy that I'm really looking to say, oh,
Well,
you
if you're
need to
going to have a
extend him?
$64 million payroll next year, because that's what you think you're going to have, and he's going to be 14 million of it, as opposed to 7.5 on a $40 million. I
Yeah.
have no, again, they're not transparent about
Right.
any of this, which is, makes them such a poor organization, because they could say, hey, we made more money. I mean, if they really were honest with Dan Connolly and you and me and weren't fighting with us about our clubhouse badges two time zones away, like, they would say, well, we're going to up payroll to 90 million this year because we've
Yeah.
done this. And we have Skyboxes and CFG Bank bought in and Royal Farms bought in. We have great Y spot. We have great sponsors in our local and our community and our blah, blah, blah. They don't do anything.
Right.
They're dormant, and all they're really doing is fighting behind the scenes to embarrass Westmore further. Like,
Yeah.
literally, that's the most important thing they can do is that. And I think Elias understands that behind all of this is that. And the energy for all that should be, okay, John Boy, we just gave you $1 billion, and we gave Steve Bisciotti $1 billion, right? Literally $1 billion for each of you. And you're telling me you can't afford an outfielder? What?
Right.
So the expectations will be up when we know how much money they're actually getting,
Sure, no question about it. So, this is all part of, for Elias, not talking about John Angelos, but for Elias in the front office, that's all part of it. And we don't know. right? I mean, again, it's great to trade for a pitcher if you can do it. If you can land Dylan Cease, if you can land Corbin Burns and not have to give up half your farm system to do it, then awesome. But it does take some of the steam out of it if it means you've got to trim payroll and dump Santander because you can't have a payroll above, and I'm just throwing out a random number, $75 million. I don't, that's just a number out of thin air. But you look
Yeah,
at
it would
where
be
they
no
are
different
with
than John's
17
number. If
guys
John
that
gave a
they.
number, it'd be out of thin air because they have more money than that. They really do.
They, of course, I mean, and that's the game that all owners play in Major League Baseball, right? Except
We
for
can
the
only
half dozen
afford,
that really shows
Salisbury
pride.
steak. That was the old
Yeah.
Andy McPhail line to Mike
Yeah.
Flanagan that I'm so offended by. I'm so offended about all of that that I like to bring it up. That Andy McPhail once said to Mike Flanagan, "Why feed him steak when they'll eat hamburger?"
Yeah.
Yeah,
So,
well, this is the
but.
off season of that where and also the Padres implosion is something that John's gonna, hey, go too far off the rails. The Massendale, the Nationals, can't go there. Gotta, that's at the end we'll wind up saying that in March when you and I are watching the team get together in Sarasota, say they did some things, but they could have done more because they always could, right? And they're competing with the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Dodgers and the, on and on and on. That's the hardest part of all of this is it's so unfair. It's a different conversation than we ever have with football, with a salary cap, or it's as
Right.
different as saying, how does Maryland compete with Alabama or Ohio State? Or, it's literally that way now that they can pay the players on the up and up. But they're always a pauper nation here. It's a poverty franchise. That's Dennis's line, poverty franchise. He uses that all the time. They really are a poverty franchise who likes to talk more poor. Now they're poor mouthing themselves into the governmental deal. But as it re relates to baseball, they get measured against these other 30 teams and what their abilities are to do. They've talked themselves into being a third world franchise in regard to finances.
Yeah, and that's what's so frustrating because the baseball side of it, the assets that they have in their farm system, the players that they have on their major league roster right now. I mean, Nestor, all those teams are competing with the Orioles too. They won 101 games last year. That wasn't it wasn't out of that sheer luck. Okay, maybe they weren't a true 101 win team, but they were at least a 95 win team in terms of their talent level. If you look at run differential and all those different things. So it's legitimate. It's very legitimate. And they've got a heck of a chance to win a World Series over these next few years, even if they don't make an abundance of outside additions. But you've got to do something. You've got to augment. You've got to pick and choose the right players to trade away and bring in the right players that are going to help fortify your rotation or your bullpen or give you another bat in the lineup, whatever it might be. I mean, they have a phenomenal opportunity here. But everything that you mentioned from the lease on down, yeah, it's part of it. And you can't deny that. And it is something that where they are right now, understanding that you've made this extraordinary improvement over the last 2 years. And now the question is, what's next? What are you doing to help yourself get over the hump? And look, some of that's going to be internal improvement. It might be, they might go out and try to acquire, like, let's say they sign Eduardo Rodriguez. To your point with the Max Scherzer thing, there's no guarantee he's going to be healthy. And it might be that they're back in October. And guess what? Grayson Rodriguez and Kyle Bradish break through this time because they'll have that experience under their belt of what happened last October. So you never really know how that's going to play out. They have all these young players, but you still want to maximize your odds, right? You still want to improve. You want to give yourself more outs. You want to improve your depth. You want to have more pitching. You want to have better arms in the back of the bullpen, knowing you're not going to have Batista this year. And they can do that, but you've got to have the proper resources and you got to spend those, use those resources wisely, whether you're talking about trade, whether you're talking about signing players. You still need to make good signings, right? Signing players is one thing. You want to make smart signings. And, that's Mike Elias at this point in time, at this stage of, the rebuild now being over, that's where the jury's still out on him in terms of being able to make those kind of moves. We saw at the trade deadline, the two deals he made didn't work out so well. And he owned that. He flat out said, it didn't work out, and that's on me. So, and that's fine. No one's going to bat 1,000. Eric DaCosta doesn't bat 1,000. Ozzie Newsome didn't bat 1,000. But they are at a point now where you do want to augment. You do want to be able to make some moves, trade away some, you know, a subset of your prospects that maybe aren't your best prospects, but are still very valuable prospects to bring in a pitcher or whatever else you identify as a need. So there's lots of opportunities, and there are a lot of ways to do this. And in doing that, Nestor, it doesn't mean their payroll has to go up to $150 million in one offseason. It wouldn't, but you know, I'm not even saying that that's what's required. But you do have at some point in time, you need to give Elias the flexibility financially for him to be able to be bold and make a land a bigger fish, so to speak. Doesn't mean it has to be a $250 million contract, but you look at what they gave Jordan Lyles, what they gave Kyle Gibson this past year. It's got, you know, he's got to be able to aim higher than that. And, you know, if they can't do that, if he doesn't, I don't want to say can't, that's the wrong word. If he's not permitted to do that, then shame on them, because boy, they're really wasting something that really looks like it has a heck of a chance to be special here over the next 5-6 years. But you can't just rely on your prospects. You can't just rely on, you know, your minor league system, and that, you know, at some point in time, you are going to have to bring in, you know, some outside additions who can really help you in, you know, whatever way it is, but specifically looking at it, another top half of the rotation guy. And like I said, I want to see some tweaking of that bullpen. I think you need to add at least one legitimate high leverage arm at the back of that bullpen, and probably two.
You know, Luke, I wrote a Dear John Liu letter 5 years ago asking if they were Rockies or Bullwinkles in regard to ownership, referring to Rocky Wirtz, who was the son of the Blackhawks owner, who was such a creep, and things went better, and they had some creepy stuff that happened. You can Google all that. But they did win Stanley Cups. Mm-hmm. They became instantly competitive. They were beloved in the city, above the Bears, above the Bulls, above the White Sox, not above the Cubs, because the Cubs are the Cubs, but they fixed things. And I held out hope that John Angelos and Lou Angelos were better humans than their father. That there has been zero evidence of that. Zero evidence of that. I learned that firsthand in Arlington, so much so that I have to laugh 17 years after I did the walkout, now going into 18 years having done the walkout. So I would just say this. This is the time where we all wish it weren't dysfunctional. But I have every piece of evidence in regard to how they've negotiated the deal with the state, Kevin Brown, my own personal dealings, how things have been handled with business with them, that it's not better. And I wish it were better. And this is a time for it to at least look better, maybe feel better. But I think the expectation levels of the fans who are vested, the people that are all in, that were on this journey this year, I think the fan base is so battered that the bar is so low for what they could or should or might do, as opposed to what normal would do, that if they had a real owner who had pockets, who wasn't a creep or a jerk, and they ran the organization normally, they would make normal off-season decisions, and we would see Henderson have a real deal. That's the state of baseball at this point, would be to get that done. But there's so much in flux with the old man's health, with their television network, with the lease. And this is coming. There's no bad time to win 100 games. There's no bad time to have a cupboard full of young stars. There's no bad time to have the manager of the year and the executive of the year and the rookie of the year and all that. But, and I'm not a Debbie Downer about any of this. I'm a absolute realist and a pragmatist and a historian. And I know a lot about all of this. They could do so much more. They have so much more wealth. They haven't. They're not going to. This would be the worst time in the world for them to look rich. You know, I mean, they're threatening a divorce with the state of Maryland, and threatening the commissioner not to talk to the governor, and the governor can't talk to the commissioner, and the kids sort of running the team in some sort of weird receivership with the old man checked out. And when he dies, who knows who's running the team? Like, this is a awkward time for them to be this loaded and with this many decisions to be made, and with this really, really small window they're going to have until these great players get really expensive or cranky, or like Adam Jones scratch their head and say, what the hell's going on here? Because it took Buck Showalter's wife, you know, a few years after she left to figure out what the hell was going on here. And she's retweeting me this summer. Kevin Brown knows what's going on. And I spent time up there amongst the Brett Hollanders and the Ben, all of the tortured masses who work under the thumb of John Angelos and tell him he's taller and he really did hit that triple. And they saw it. They have video of it. HD. And it was off Palmer. So I want to temper my own soul and your soul as to say, yeah, if you come back to me on February 15th and they've broken for spring training and they've acted as a normal organization and they've done all check-offable things, including letting everybody in on where Elias and Hyde are from a snug standpoint in regard to the contract and their star players, quite frankly, that there's a vision. The vision that he threatened Dan Connolly about, you know, the opening of the books and all of that. And right now, I'm going to go up against this again, dude. They don't have a lease. They can't even put their tickets on sale. They don't have a building to play in or an agreement to play in it. It's insane.
Yeah. I'm going to throw one name out there that if this were all normal and everything that you just laid out wasn't an issue or wasn't at least a concern or at least a perceived concern, you'd go land Blake Snell in free agency. Left-handed starter who was arguably the best pitcher in baseball over the final like 4 months of 2023. He's 31 years old, left-handed, pitching at Camden Yards now. Not the Camden Yards of old, but the big left field. I mean, you'd go sign Blake Snell. And guess what? Even signing him to whatever the market will be for him. And you know, we'll revisit that whenever he signs with, you know, whichever team's going to land him. Even making that signing, their payroll would still be way low compared to most of baseball. So absolutely.
Let's begin the conversation with how effed up then. Seriously, because they're not willing to teams are willing
to
do.
But I'm just saying, right. But that's my whole point. You know, I'm already, and it goes back to what you said, the lowering of expectations that, you know, we didn't even talk about Blake Snell. We're not even talking. I mean, of course we're not talking about Ohtani, and Ohtani can't pitch this coming year anyway, but you know, Blake Snell, who was the best healthy pitcher on the market, right? You know, this off season. And we're not even talking about that when he would be perfect for the Orioles. I mean, he really would be just baseball, right?
If
not,
you were serious about
putting
winning,
the financial side of it aside, just
winning.
Baseball.
Right.
Yeah. And again, signing him would not take you up to a $200 million payroll. Far from it, you know, because that's where they are. I mean, they are so cost-effective right now and so cost-controlled, you know, club control, cost-controlled with all these great young players that they have. And by the way, that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing. That's a great thing. But you'd like to take advantage of that. And that's when you would be able to go out and sign a Blake Snell. You know, when you're talking about like where the Astros were 6 years ago, you know, and they had all these great young players. And then, yeah, they went out and got Justin Verlander at the deadline and they won it all then, you know. So you want to see the Orioles be able to make that move. And with all of those things you laid out there and all of the history and ownership and lease and all of that.
And no sign, you know, that it's any better right now. You know what I mean? Like that was where I was with the Rocky Bulga thing to say, man, once we get to this point, show me your competence. They have not. I have no confidence in their competence.
Baseball operations is very competent, but the business side and that still is going to clash at some point in time. And I can still recall, Nestor, I was talking to another member of the media. This was probably a month before the pandemic started, you know, and the world shut down. And the conversation we had was, you know, as good as things are, you know, trending from a farm system standpoint, development, all those different things, the young players that they have, the sentiment was they're going to get to a point where they're going to be ready. You know, that, and look, they won 101 games this year. They're more than ready. They're past that point. But they're going to get to a point where it's going to be time to augment. It's going to be time to go spend, whether you're talking about free agents, whether it's trades, whether it's re-signing your own. And the fear at that point was the business side is going to ruin that, or at least interfere with that would probably be the best way to say it. But here we are. And until we see otherwise, it's tough not to be skeptical in terms of ownership being willing to do what it takes to really fortify and augment this thing and not just be in a position where, hey, they were awesome last year, you know, and they got these young players, but to be able to say, we've got all these young players and we just added a legitimate number one or number two starter to go with Bradish, who was fourth in Cy Young, and to go with Grayson Rodriguez, who was looked like a stud the second half of last year. You did something like that, this fan base would be really jacked up. Is that going to happen? Well, I'll believe it when I see it. And to your point, the lease, you know, beginning with that, looming over everything, you know, it inevitably is going to interfere with the baseball side at some point in time here, unless we see a resolution that looks satisfactory. But again, until that happens, hard to hold your breath on it.
Next time you and I talk baseball, I'm going to show you my biggest offseason acquisition, which was a near mint condition 1962 Luis Aparicio with the panel behind it. Luis signed all these cards, and I took him down to the Babe Ruth Museum, and like I've been on the lookout for the ones that are a little more beaten up. So like I got to improve my 57 a little bit. My 56 is in pretty good shape, and when I saw that the mint condition went sold for $314 in the overnight from 56, I'm like not so much on that. But I am back in acquisition mode for Houston Oilers and Luis Aparicio stuff now that I've almost completed my Pacifica belt buckle collection. So I'm looking for baseball acquisitions. I acquired Geddy Lee's book on Friday night. There's some baseball in there. So, Rick Emmett's coming on the show this month. So I got some rock and roll stories to tell. And I might even get Geddy on to talk some baseball. So it's been fun talking baseball. Can we talk more baseball? Now that we're going 101 games, like, can we do some baseball talk around here? Are we allowed to be critical?
Yeah, well, I don't want to just be critical. I want to be excited about the offseason. I mean, they won 101 games, and they're not really losing guys of consequence unless they trade them away, you know, because you're trying to trim payroll or whatever. So there's a lot to be excited about.
I don't need them
about.
To win 102 games. I need them to win the World Series.
And that's the – you just said it. And that's where, again, they're at this point. They're at the point where you say they're a playoff – whether they win 101 again or not, they're a playoff caliber club, especially with three wild cards. What can they do to put themselves in better position that when they return, if and when they are back there playing in October, that they improve their chances? A lot of it's luck, right? I mean, a lot of it's random. You know, the Arizona Diamondbacks are a great example of that. But what can you do on the pitching side specifically to fortify your chances there? And we're going to see how it plays out here over the next couple months.
You can find Luke at Baltimore Luke. You can probably find him out in Owings Mills, as well as the Ravens go L.A. by, and it's a weird week, and we're all going to have turkey and feel fat, sit around and watch football for 4 days this week. So until we get to play on Sunday night, and then we'll sit around and do it more. And at some point, the Orioles are going to have to get on it, not sit on it, because it's Thanksgiving, and they were pretty good last year. So we got an eye on that. I have an eye on the Maryland Stadium Authority. Tom Kelso came on this week. I would highly encourage you to get educated on where your tax dollars are going and what shenanigans the Angelos family is pulling that's going to benefit the Bisciotti family and what it means ultimately for the price of your tickets, the downtown experience, the quality of the teams, and really the quality of the lifestyle here in the land of pleasant living. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. My baseball last name serving me well here in the offseason. We're Baltimore Positive. Stay with us.